We have been journeying, if you like, through some of the hymns that are favorites in this time of year, or at this time of year. And today we're looking at What Child Is This, which we just sang. The nativity play was going as planned. And Joseph and Mary were going from house to house, knocking on the doors and asking if there was any room for them. As they continued to get no room answers, a little voice from the back of the church shouted out, "You should have called ahead the book." It brought the house down. Ah, Christmas pageants. Parents and grandparents love them. Sunday school teachers, not so much, maybe. Once a year, out come the old bathrobes, the foil-covered paper crowns, and a doll representing Jesus. Unless there's a suitable baby present, and ours is right there. She's going to be the star next week in our pageant. I remember, as many of you who are a little older do, those pageants we had when we were in Sunday school. But truth be told, I never acted in one of them. My brother Ian and I always volunteered early on to avoid being shepherds or whatnot by volunteering to pull open and close the curtains of every pageant. For many children, including myself, the best part of the pageant was that bag of treats we used to get at the end of it that always contained a clementine orange. Do you remember those? Some of you may remember those. Well, as I mentioned, we're going to have a Christmas pageant here next week, and it will be delightful, and it will probably have some surprises too. And you will remember that as a staple of almost every Christmas pageant that's ever been held, this carol, "What Child Is This," is sung at some point. I'll remind you of the lyrics. "What child is this, who laid to rest on Mary's lap is sleeping, whom angels greet with anthems sweet, while shepherds watch are keeping. So bring him incense, gold, and myrrh. Come, peasant king, to own him. The King of Kings salvation brings. Let loving hearts enthrone him. This is Christ the King, whom shepherds guard and angels sing. Haste, haste, to bring him loud, the babe, the son of Mary." You know, the history of the author of these very simple yet elegant words is a lesson in and of itself for the faithful. Too often we look at our own current situation and we think that God can't use us where we are. After all, what impact could my ordinary life make on the lives of other people? I mean, Paul was a missionary, and Martin Luther was a monk, and most hymns are written by ministers. Does God only use those who live in the mission field? Well, the history of today's hymn is a cautionary tale about selling oneself short in service to God. William Chatterson Dix was born to John and Susanna Dix in Bristol, England, June 14, 1837. Now, William's childhood passed without any noteworthy events for William, and that's exactly how a childhood should be, probably. His father was a surgeon by profession, primarily, it seems, not because he cared about his patients, but because it earned him a lot of money. But his father also was a writer, and he wrote books for pleasure. John Dix, William's father, wrote The Life of Chatterson the Poet and a book of pen pictures of popular English preachers, among numerous other books. His father gave his son the middle name to honor Thomas Chatterson, a poet about whom he had written a biography. William was educated at the grammar school in Bristol, England, for a mercantile career. After he graduated, he became the manager of the Maritime Insurance Company of Glasgow, where he spent most of his life. And while William followed his father's footsteps on the latter interest, that is writing, he went a completely other direction for his profession. As a manager of an insurance company, William was quite happy to just keep to an average life, quite happy for his greatest achievement to be closing those big insurance deals. But he was meant for much more. And God was about to show William just how much more. At the age of 29, William was struck with a severe illness. I could find no record exactly what it was. And this brought his life to a screeching halt, and he was forced to spend day after day in bed, ill. And his body fought to survive. When the worst of it was over, William still had a considerable length of time to recover. And that's when depression hit him. Physical sickness revealed to William the sickness of his own soul. It sent him on a quest for his true purpose in life. And thankfully, the answers he sought in the right place, because William became an avid reader of the scriptures. This reading of the scriptures brought about a spiritual awakening. And when William was physically well, he began to live his life for God. So how did William live for God? Did he become a minister? A missionary? A monk? No. He returned to his life as a manager of a life insurance company because he trusted God to use him wherever he was. And while William worked at the insurance company, he used his love of writing as a form of worship. William's favorite form of writing was poetry. And while most of his poems stayed hidden within a writing desk at home, there was one poem that William wanted to share beyond his desk drawer. And the poem was, "What Child Is This?" Now, William was not musically inclined, so he began to search for an established melody to pair with his poem. And there was one such melody that gave the poem a kind of sense of grandeur and significance, a classic melody already beloved in the Christmas season, "Greensleeves." Slowly, the combined poem and melody began to spread from church to church as Christmas seasons came and went. 6 years after its origin, "What Child Is This?" was published for the very first time in a collection called "Christmas Carols, Old and New." And with time, that humble little poem from a humble insurance salesman became one of the most well-known uses of "Greensleeves" and its haunting sound. The first lesson from this carol is straightforward enough. Wherever you are in life, whatever your profession may be, never believe the lies that God only uses those who are professionals or in the mission field. Just look at William Chatterson Dick, an insurance salesman whose poem of praise echoes on to this day. Now then, on to the carol itself and its significant meaning. William Chatterson Dix's carol invokes the image of a traditional or typical nativity scene. It's why this particular carol is used in almost every Christmas pageant. Jesus is there on Mary's lap, and angels and shepherds, well, they tend to him. The second verse speaks of the presents brought by the Magi. And in turn, that's the whole point of the Nativity, is the gift of salvation that Jesus brought with his incarnation. These simple words, penned by William Dix, invoke familiar images of the Nativity. And they point to the core matter of the whole Christian experience. The carol asks the question, we have all asked when we gaze at the nativity scene. What child is this? Why is this child born 2,000 years ago worth celebrating and worth writing carols about? as a touchstone. All of us know the joy of a new baby and what it brings to us. Whether they're our grandchildren, our children, our nieces and nephews, babies in general, we just love them. Just watch on every given Sunday, including today, how many adults in this fellowship gravitate to Flora when she's around. Or any other of our young children, for that matter. Babies are wonderful, but beyond our immediate circle of social contacts, the rest of the world doesn't know about or really care about your precious new little one. You know, people in China, for example, who've never met you, they don't care about looking at the pictures of your grandbabies. They really don't care. So what makes the birth of Jesus not only special, but also universally important? What child is this that calls to shepherds and calls to wise men and to people for centuries? Why does this child mean anything to you personally? The writer of the Gospel of John has some insight into what makes the birth of Jesus the most significant birth of any baby before or since. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. A little further on, we read this. The true light which gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through Him. Yet the world did not know Him. He came to His own, and His own people did not receive Him. But to all who did receive Him, who believed in His name, He gave the right to become the children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. The birth of Christ was not an ordinary birth of an ordinary couple. It was the birth of the most unique person in all of history. The birth of Jesus was the incarnation of God Himself. In other words, the very God that we believe in became a man. The significance of this is profound, and it'll take all our length of lives, even all of eternity, for us to fully appreciate this. The conception and birth of Jesus Christ was the mingling of God with humanity. Such a thing had never occurred before. The incarnation of Jesus, God in flesh, is what sets our faith apart from every other religion, every other philosophy. Long ago, there ruled in Persia a wise and very good king. He loved his people dearly. He wanted to know how his people lived. He wanted to know about their hardships. And often he would dress in clothes of a working man or a beggar, and he would go to the homes of the poor in his kingdom. No one whom he visited thought he was their ruler. One time, he visited a very poor man who lived in a cellar, of all things. He ate the very coarse food that the poor man ate. He spoke cheerfully and kind words to the man. Then he left that man's home. Later, the king came back to visit the poor man again, but this time he disclosed his identity by saying, "I am your king." Now, the king thought the man would surely ask for some gift or favor, but he didn't. Instead, he said, "You left your palace and your glory to visit me in this dark, dreary place. You ate the coarse food I gave you. You brought gladness to my heart. To others, you have given your rich gifts. To me, you have given yourself." That's the point, my friends. A baby enters our lives, and from then on, we give ourselves to that new life. Our time, our talent, our treasure go to caring for this new life. And this is the case for many years. It's a demanding task, I think, to raise children. And, you know, that demanding task is actually giving pause to some people. I saw recently in a news report that in South Korea, they've got a real problem because the birth rate has fallen so low in that country. There are not enough new children being born to fill jobs in the future or to support their pension plans. Now, in Canada, we have a similar problem. In Korea, it is mainly because young women there do not want to have children because it interferes with their careers. The patriarchal society of Korea also downgrades the value of women who take a maternity leave. For many women in Korea, the birth of a baby is just not worth the effort. William Dix, in his simple words, recognize the way a baby can truly change our lives. You know, babies depend on us for everything. We need to feed and clothe and change and of late scour the planet for children's Tylenol. We anxiously listen to our little ones to watch for anything that seems to be out of the ordinary or something that indicates distress. The vulnerability of being a baby is absolute. So why did God send his son as a baby? Part of the answer may be that it reminds us of the way babies change things. In terms of Jesus, this baby changes everything. In 1868, Bret Harte, who wrote stories and poetry about the California Gold Rush, wrote a short story called The Luck of Roaring Camp. It was a story that turned Mr. Harte into an internationally known writer. The story was written about a mining town in California called Roaring Camp. The only woman in that camp was a Cherokee woman named Sal. She became pregnant, but she died while giving birth to that baby, a son. So this left a baby in a whole town of single men. Not just men, but rough, tough, rude, crude men of the Wild West. What in the world are they going to do with a baby? A child was thought to be a sign of good fortune, so they gave him the name Thomas Luck. They originally put him in a dirty box for a cradle wrapped in dirty clothes, but that just didn't look right, so they ordered a rosewood cradle with satin sheets and a soft pillow for the baby. The best room they had was still pretty filthy, so the men got down on their hands and knees and they cleaned the floors and the walls of that room. Then they decided if they're going to take care of a baby, they need to start using soap themselves. They need to wash their hands and they need to bathe more often. And then they said to each other, maybe we don't need to be gambling so much. Maybe we don't need to be fighting so much. Maybe we don't need to be drinking so much. And as the story progresses, the entire town of Roaring Camp is transformed by the arrival of one single baby boy. William Dix, in his simple carol, recognized that as charming and simple the image of the Nativity is, it continues to be the power and the meaning of the Nativity is all about the one who came, the baby in Bethlehem. God knew what humanity needed. And out of love for us, he sent his only one, the only one who could help us in our need. Just consider for a moment what God was seeking to do by sending Jesus. If our greatest need had been information, God would have sent us an educator, right? If our greatest need had been technology, God would have sent us a scientist. If our greatest need had been money, God would have sent us an economist. If our greatest need had been pleasure, God would have sent us an entertainer. But our greatest need was forgiveness. So God sent us a Savior. What child is this? I think if you search your heart for the answer to that critical question, God will reveal the universal love He shared with you through a baby born in Bethlehem.